Well, good morning all, and welcome to the NFC Auditorium. Matt Wilcox is our first presenter of the day. Discarding data, I think I do that sort of pretty automatically without even actually trying, so it'll be good to hear something about it. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Welcome to the fun and profit session. I'm going to be talking more about fun, and Leslie's talk, who's up next, will be covering the fun bits a bit more thoroughly than I am, I think. So, as my introduction just said, you know, a lot of us discard data on a fairly regular basis. Some of us don't. One of my colleagues says he never deletes an email. I said, not even spam. He said, well, I filter my spam. I said, that's deleting email. He said, well, anyway. But the steady state of disks is full, and this has been true for the last 40 years or so. Disks are now getting larger faster enough that some people say, well, I just buy a new laptop when my hard drive fills up, and it's got a larger hard disk in it. That's not a great tactic when using a solid-state drive, and this talk is mostly about SSDs. When you have a solid-state drive, keeping it full actually slows it down, and it causes it to wear out more quickly. And most of this talk is going to be about why that happens. I don't practice what I preach. That is a 3% empty hard drive, and that is slash home on this laptop. I need to fix that. A little bit of going through my data and figuring out what I really don't need to carry around with me anymore. Some vendors of large SCSI arrays, fiber channel arrays, some of those vendors care about this kind of thing as well. Show of hands, who's got a solid-state drive who's going to get one soon? Lots of you. Who's got $1 million fiber channel array? Two. Okay. You're going to be bored. The rest of you, you're going to be interested. So why do SSDs care whether they're full or not? I mean, your standard hard drive doesn't care. An SSD is really emulating a hard drive. It's not a hard drive. Internally, it looks very, very different from any piece of spinning rust that you've ever seen. The current generation of SSDs, and this won't be true forever, but it's going to be true for, I would think, the next 5 years at least, and my history of predictions is true. I'm not good at making predictions. NAND has lots of really interesting characteristics in terms of it's very different in terms of its access time, its seek time. So, if a hard drive has to seek across half the platter, that's going to cost milliseconds of time. And there's no equivalent access time latency on accessing a NAND chip. You just go right to that NAND chip. But one advantage of spinning Rust is that when you want to overwrite a sector, you go and overwrite a sector. NAND doesn't let you do that. If you want to write to a block of NAND that you've written to before, you have to erase it first. And for that reason, what people do is they put a remapping layer between what appears to be the hard drive and the NAND chips themselves. So when you write to block 5, and then you write something else to block 5, that doesn't get written to the same NAND chip that you wrote to earlier. It gets written somewhere completely different, and the drive keeps a mapping, knowing that block 5 is now NAND block 97 instead of NAND block 63 that it was the first time you wrote to NAND block 5, to the SSD block 5. My employer considers it valuable intellectual property exactly what algorithms are used, and so they don't even tell me what algorithms they use within the drive. But in order to maximize the longevity of the drive, you have to try and use all the NAND blocks equally. Write to them an equal number of times. The number of reads you do to a NAND probably doesn't matter all that much, but when you're writing to particular blocks of NAND, you want to try and spread those writes out evenly across the entire drive. And there's a tension there. There's a tension between wanting to write only to blocks that you can erase, and there's a tension between writing to writing evenly. So from time to time, you have to wait for, instead of just looking for erase blocks which are now completely empty, you have to copy data out of one that is partially empty into a fresh block, and this is called write amplification, where you do one write, you write perhaps half a K to the drive, and the drive goes off and actually writes 9K of data that you didn't know about, but this is causing your NAND chips to wear down faster. And this is true to all NAND-based hard drives. It's just how they're made. So how does the drive know which of these NAND blocks are still have good data in them and which ones have only stale data in them and can be erased? Well, it keeps track. But the only way that we have of telling the drive which blocks aren't used anymore is by overwriting them. And once you've overwritten them, you've given it new data to store. So there isn't a way to say, oh, yeah, I just deleted this 1.1 gigabyte file that was a half-hour episode of The Simpsons. The drive still thinks all those data blocks are in use because the operating system hasn't told it, hey, those blocks aren't in use anymore. Because there isn't a way. Until TRIM. ACS2 is the name of the standard that comes out of the T13 committee, who specify serial ATA, and they used to specify parallel ATA, but I think they've pretty much stopped work on that. So they came up with this command called data set management, and it has a sub-function called trim. So everyone talks about a trim command. It's slightly inappropriate. It's not the official standard body specified thing, but everyone just calls it the trim command because it is. In a single trim command, you can tell it about 4 million different ranges, and in each range, you can tell it up to 64K. So you can, with a single command, you can tell the drive to forget about a huge amount of data. So, problem solved. And that's 15 minutes. Perhaps I should, get on with the rest of my slides. So what are the problems with TRIM? Well, the ATA standards body did not specify what the appropriate response was from the drive if you read a trimmed sector. And you can see how they made this mistake. You're basically breaking your promise to the drive. You're telling the drive, I don't care what's in this block. I will never read it again. Get rid of it. And then you're going back and saying, oh, yeah, what's in that block? So some drives will return the old contents, what used to be in that sector. Some drives return zeros. Some drives will return completely random data. They aren't permitted to return data that was written to a different sector. That would be a bug. That would be a security hole. That would be pretty horrible. The best bit is that some drives will do each of these different things depending on exactly which block it was that you sent the trim down for. And some drives will change their answer over time. And if you're doing RAID 5 and you've calculated your parity over this data block and then it changes, your parity, you've just lost data. I mean, the controllers are going to say, it's gone. The ATA committee did realize they'd made a mistake, and they have since expanded. They've added some little bits here and there that allow the drive to say, I return zeros, and I promise I will never change the result after you've read it. So things have got a little better, but there's an awful lot of drives from cheaper manufacturers who do not set these bits, and so they're not good for using in RAID arrays. Okay, the question was, why would anyone read a sector that's been trimmed? And the proposed response was, because you've done a DD read of the entire drive, which is true. If you're going to image a drive, then yes. And in that case, if you're imaging a drive, then you wouldn't care about what data it was. It could be any data, as long as it wasn't data that should have been somewhere else on the drive. RAID 5 is a great example of somewhere where you might, if you aren't trimming an entire RAID stripe at once, then you would want to calculate parity over that block. So you need it to be deterministic. We did have some other examples, but I've forgotten what they were. But there are several legitimate cases, but they are kind of corner cases. And so you really can't understand why the IDE committee didn't think of them before putting out the spec. So I'm sure all of us, I certainly have, issued an RM minus RF in a directory that they really didn't mean to. I had a tape backup. I appreciate most of us don't have tape drives. So a lot of people, when they do that kind of thing, reach for the power, pull the power as quickly as possible, and hope that they can use some kind of drive recovery program to get their file system back. But if the trim has gone down and the drive has actually thrown away your data, there is no way in the world you can get that back. You don't even know. Even if you pull the drive apart and look at the NAND chips with an electron microscope, you're still not going to know what the mapping was. You know you wanted sector 208, but you have no idea which NAND block that's in, because the drive won't tell you. So, but maybe this isn't a huge problem. I mean, EXT3 already makes undeletes really, really hard. Because what EXT3 does, what X2 did was simply null out the inode entry. And so you could go looking for bits of the file that you knew had certain signatures. What EXT3 does is it actually writes zeros to the indirect and the double indirect and the triple indirect blocks. And so you can't find most of the blocks that you've got, that you had in the file. Something else that might save you is BTRFS snapshots. If you've been creating a snapshot, then it's kind of like having an online rolling backup. And of course, you obviously back up your drives to, other hard drives, because tape doesn't keep up with drives these days. The rate of increase in drives is just ridiculous compared to the increase in tape. So I was talking with some of my friends, and they're saying, yeah, we back up. We just go out and buy large hard drives and back up to those. You all make backups, right? Yeah. Computer forensics people don't like trim. If you've you can imagine there are certain raids where the law enforcement authorities might, or customs officials might, confiscate your hard drive and go through it. Bug or feature that they can't get the data that you've deleted. Okay, the question was, why is it not possible to determine what the mapping was between the drive sectors and the NAND blocks? Because obviously the drive does know. I mean, if you pull the power on the drive and plug it back in, the drive actually does a reconstruction and figures out where all the blocks on it are. So the drive does know. There isn't a way. There is no specified way to get what the current mappings are from the drive. I don't even know if there is an unspecified way. If there's something, maybe there's a magic command that might get it to tell you what that current mapping is. You would have to know an awful lot about how that generation of drive works internally, because it can change from firmware revision to firmware revision. It's not even a question of knowing what it is for a given model. Each time you update the firmware, you might have a different mapping. And one final problem with trim, and this one I actually care about, is that trim can be rather slow. And there's two reasons for this. One is that the ATA specification defines different classes of commands. So we had PIO commands, and then we had DMA commands, because programmed IO is quite kind of slow. And then there were first-party DMA commands, and just on and on, different revisions of the spec covering up these this completely crap interface that was inherited, you know, all the way from the mid-1980s. And these commands still exist in the modern serial ATA standard of today, and drives are actually supposed to respond to them. The latest set of commands are called NCQ, Native Command Queuing. And the big advantage of NCQ is it does what SCSI's been doing for two decades, which is lets the drive have more than one command to do at once. And this was a bit of a win back when we had rotating media, because you could give the drive, say, four commands at once, and the drive would figure out what the optimum motion was for the disk, for the drive head, so that it could service those four commands, so that the commands might come back completed in a different order from the order you sent them down. And that was okay, that was cool, we understood how to do that. ATA came up with this innovation about 5 years ago. But for some reason, and I'm not quite sure what it was, when they specified this data set management command, or trim, they specified it as a DMA command rather than NCQ command. So in order to send a DMA command, you have to wait for all the currently existing NCQ commands to come back. Well, first of all, you have to stop sending any more NCQ commands. Then you wait for all the currently existing ones to come back. Then you can send a DMA command. You wait for it to come back, and then you can send a whole bunch, all the NCQ commands that have been batched up behind it, waiting for that DMA command to finish. The other problem is that the drive has to record the information. It has to mess around in its internal data structures and say, oh, these blocks, they aren't used anymore, they no longer map to given areas of NAND, or they map to the special NAND sector that always returns zero, or however it is that they're working internally. Something I forgot to mention is that when you with rotating media, when you're sending down four commands at once, that was about the optimum number of commands to have with the drive at once was four, maybe eight, depends on your exact workload. But with SSDs, at least those based on NAND, you are best served by giving it as many commands to chew on at once as it can. Internally, all these drives, I think from all the manufacturers, are extremely parallel. There's quite a lot of latency involved in access in reading and writing NAND chips. So if you can overlap these operations, which you can because each NAND chip is on a separate channel and is completely independent of each other, if the drive's got a lot of work to do, you can get a lot more work done in a given period of time than if you just sent them one at a time. So NCQ commands are really, really important for SSDs, which is why I'm very perplexed that they went and specified this as a DMA command. Question. Yeah, the comment was made that this performance problem can be a whole lot worse on the cheaper drives, because the most naive implementation you can think of for trim is that you actually do the NAND erase, which can take a very long time, before you return and say, yes, I did that command. Yes, buying cheap SSDs means you don't value your time or your data because they lose data. Yeah. Buy an expensive drive, like from some company. I'm sorry? So, obviously, being a Linux kernel programmer, my role in all this was to do a Linux implementation. And this turned out to be an awful lot more tricky and time-consuming than I had ever imagined. So the first problem is that the ATA subsystem is still deeply entwined into the SCSI subsystem, and you can't send an ATA command for which there is no SCSI equivalent. So first I have to look at SCSI. So what's the SCSI equivalent of TRIM? Well, the T10 SCSI committee, in comparison to the T13 ATA committee, is full of smarter people. But they don't always make smart decisions. They went and specified two different commands. There were two proposals, one called write same and one called unmap. And instead of making a decision, they put them both in the spec. I've talked with a number of array manufacturers. They've all implemented one or the other and are in the process of implementing the second one. None of them are happy with the situation. I've talked to several other people involved in Linux SCSI. None of them are happy with the situation either. The committee has failed to produce a reasonable standard. But SCSI drives, people are not making NAND-based SCSI drives that I know of. People are building big arrays with NANDs as some component of this multi-tier storage architecture, but no one's actually going out and making SSDs with a SCSI interface. And there's a number of reasons for that, some better than others. The problem with these SCSI commands is that they don't quite match TRIM. Write same says, here's a block of data, write it to this range of blocks. And what the array does is then says, are all the bytes in this block zero? Okay, then I'll just get rid of it. I won't actually write it, I'll just remember that all these blocks are now zero. And you're thinking, well, hang on, why are they doing this? Well, the current rage amongst these big array manufacturers is called thin provisioning. And what they do is they'll sell you a 10 petabyte array with 1 petabyte of disk in it. And for much cheaper than actually selling you 10 petabytes of storage. And when you've used about 800 terabytes of it, the array calls home and the salesman's calls you up and says, did you know your array's running low on disk? No, you didn't. Okay. Well, we've got a special offer on this week. We'll sell you another petabyte of hard drive, very cheap, good prices just for you. And you say, oh, right, yes. Rather than sending out an email telling everyone to delete all their data, which I could, I'll just spend a bit of extra money. And so the salesman gets his bonus and everyone's happy. Some people are a bit wise to this and say, well, hang on. We've actually gone and deleted 700 gigabytes there. 700 terabytes. We'd like to get that data back. And so for thin provisioning purposes, they want to be able to let these arrays know that these blocks are not in use anymore. The other interesting issue is that SATA drives can be plugged into SAS disk arrays. So this is how we're currently doing our TPC benchmark. We don't do TPC benchmark. Our online transaction processing benchmark runs with a large commercial database. What we do is we buy SAS HBAs. SAS cards, plug them into these disk arrays, and then plug SATA drives into those SAS arrays. So the card talks the SAS protocol, which is essentially SCSI. It's one of the SCSI protocols. It talks SAS between the card and the chassis. The chassis has a translation layer that translates SCSI into ATA commands and sends the ATA commands to the drives. So inside that enclosure, there is a fairly complex bit of software translating from one protocol to another. And given the complexity we have had in Linux trying to translate between these SCSI commands and these ATA commands, I am entirely unconvinced that the firmware writers for these enclosures are going to get it right. So back to the Linux implementation. Oh, explain write same, not unmap. Yes, sorry, my bad. Unmap is a lot more like trim than write same is, in that unmap can specify a whole bunch of different different ranges in a single command, and it can and it doesn't actually transfer data to the drive that the array has to. The array has to check is all zeros or not. It transfers a list of sectors and says, just get rid of all these. So it's a lot like trim, but both trim and unmap send a list of blocks, and the lists are in a completely different format for no really good reason. Each committee used essentially a struct that they had already defined. But of course, they were differently defined. So, in the Linux implementation, we started out, and a lot of this work was done by my good friend and colleague Dave Woodhouse. We started out with a block layer API so that file systems could be converted to send discards down to the block device. And we also added an IOCTL so that user space could submit discards. This was mostly for testing purposes. We've got four file systems currently using this API. I'm aware of a few more patches that are in progress. I know XFS is working on it. There are unmerged patches for EXT2 and EXT3. And I suspect other file systems will follow suit in the future as more drives actually implement trim and it starts to become a more pressing issue for them. And because Dave Woodhouse was doing this bit of the work, he implemented discards in the MTD block layer. For those of you who don't know, MTD stands for Memory Technology Devices. It's basically how Linux implements support for flash chips natively. Rather than having flash chips hidden behind an ATA controller, on some systems, like the OLPC, I think, the NAND chips are basically accessible directly by Linux. So SD, which is the SCSI driver, translates discard commands coming down from the file system into this write same command. That work was actually done by Christoph Helwig. libATA translates that write same command into a trim command. And we're done. Why don't we use unmap instead? Because the array that Christoph was working with supported write same and not unmap. There's also a philosophical disagreement, and Christoph's on one side of us and I'm on the other, about whether the appropriate API within the kernel is to say this range needs to be discarded, or whether the appropriate API is to say these ranges need to be discarded. And unmap and trim will support the second API, and write same only supports the first. So. That's an ongoing point of disagreement. Good. Implement both. Yes, of course. Actually, we might. One of the options we're looking at is to have a three-way choice to say, well, what kind of device are we sending this command to? Does it support unmap? Does it support write same? Does it support trim? And construct the appropriate command and send that down rather than translating it in the ATA layer. Yeah, it may just work out that we have to do it that way.
Could we pop back a slide for 10 seconds of frantic scribbling?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
The slides will be available after the talk. I've been given instructions to put them on this USB key so they can get uploaded to the website, so you will be able to get the slides afterwards.
Is there any kind of protocol command in any of the protocols that allows you to just directly access the flash block so that you could use the MTD driver? And if not, will someone propose one?
That's kind of out of scope for this talk. We can talk about that later. Okay, so we've implemented it, and that's good. But what I mean, and it really is good. You know, I've got 97% free on that hard drive. I would like to go off deleting stuff and have it actually make a difference to, you know, my hard drive's longevity. But what's the cost? And so I ran some benchmarks on BTRFS, and I saw a 50% performance penalty. The time taken to delete a kernel tree went up from 4 seconds to 6 seconds, and that's pretty hefty. I mean, it's pretty much a worst case scenario for using trim. You probably wouldn't use it you probably wouldn't notice it in day to day operations. But it's kind of hard to live with yourself knowing you just slow down deletes by 50%. But as I started gathering data for this, I ran this benchmark over and over again, creating kernel tree, delete the kernel tree, untar the kernel tree, delete the kernel tree. And the penalty went down substantially. And we really don't know what's gone on there. It could be a BTRFS thing. The BTRFS is now issuing its discards differently, or issuing fewer discards, because we tried doing this using ext4 and didn't see that didn't see you know, this 50% to 10% discrepancy. It might be something to do with the drive, as you know, various blocks have been used and discard it's responding differently. We don't know at this point. We don't have the data. But back when I was seeing a 50% performance decrease, I thought, hey, this would be a great thing to write a paper about. Oops. So back to the point made earlier about trims versus write same. The trim command lets you specify lots of different ranges all in one command. So what we can do is group them. You know, if we've deleted a file and that's freed up blocks here, 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 and here, we can send out one trim command that does all that. But our current API only lets us send down, a single range at a time. So you send down four trims instead of one. So at the file system level, we could change the block layer API to let you send down multiple ranges at once. What I was trying to do here was fix it up again at the I/O scheduler. So keep the API very simple for the file system, where it will send four commands. And then when we get down to actually going to issue the commands, we say, we've got four together here. Let's batch them all up into a single command and send that one instead of four. And then I looked at the CFQL elevator, which stands for completely fair queuing. It's the default elevator in Linux. And it's really, really complicated. I think it would take me about a month of reading it to understand it. I said, okay, that's not going to happen. I don't have time for that. So I took the NOOP elevator, which is very, very simple. Commands come in, commands go out. They go out in the order they come in. There's a queue. It's a simple list. So I said, right, well, I'll make it more complicated. So I copied the NOOP elevator to a new elevator, and I decided I'll call it the discard elevator, because I'm original in my naming. And I gave it a second queue, so normal commands go in the first queue and discard commands go in the second queue. And when commands go out, anything that's in the ordinary queue goes out first, and anything in the discard queue goes out second. Can anyone spot the bug? Race condition, that's right. If you discard a sector, and then you write to it, and you get the write coming before the discard, you're kind of screwed. So that's why this is a proof of concept only, because I need to put in... Yes, there's also a security hole for the same reason. You are correct. So this was only a proof of concept. So the 50% penalty went down to about 9% in the end. If the file system is issuing discards, then performance is 91% of what it used to be. But using NOOP instead of CFQ gets you back 3% performance. All the complex stuff that the CFQ elevator does actually penalizes you by about 3%, or at least penalize me using my hardware. It may be different for you. And I'm glad that I didn't spend too much time on doing this, because using the discard elevator loses me another 2% of performance. So that wasn't worth doing, or isn't worth fixing. It's worth doing, but not worth fixing. So there's a lot more work that can be done here. I haven't yet tried to merge multiple discards into a single trim. Another possibility is saying, well, you know, trims are slow, and it doesn't really matter if there's a couple of kilobytes here and a couple of kilobytes there that gets trimmed. We'll just ignore the fact that these trims have been sent by the file system and pretend that they were never sent. Trim is only a performance optimization. It's not guaranteed to write to these sectors. A third possibility is to stop the file systems doing discard at all. It's entirely legitimate to have like a background scrubbing task that goes through looking for large ranges that aren't actually in use anymore and send down trims for those ranges. That's an entirely reasonable way to approach it, and we haven't even tried that. And of course, if I continue this work, if I continue with this I/O elevator, I need to ensure that writes don't pass discards. That's the end of my talk. Any more questions? There's one up at the back there.
Forgive me for not knowing a whole lot about how command queuing works on disks, but the thing about writes not passing discards or the reverse, does command queuing really not have a serial number that says I got these from the host and that they're logically in this order, disk please don't reorder them? Is that seriously not there in command queuing?
SCSI has that bit.
So SATA probably doesn't.
I'm not sure whether ATA has that bit or not.
Because if it does, then you wouldn't need to do that unless the disk was actually broken.
Right. Well, sorry. So there are different places where writes and discards might pass each other. I'm talking about in the host side elevator before we send the commands to the disk. Then, as I think you were saying, you've got the point where it might the disk firmware might reorder them, and yeah, that would be a huge problem. One point I forgot to put on the further work here is figuring out where we can not issue discards, because if you've got the situation where you're writing to a sector immediately after you've discarded it, sending that discard was a complete waste. Because the drive knows the old contents of that aren't used anymore because you've just overwritten it. So if you know you're about to write to a sector, don't send a discard for it.
Okay. Yeah, how you going?
Hey.
If that batching works, if you got that successfully working in past the prototype stage, is that the same thing as virtually creating that into this NCQ command you were talking about?
No, it's not. So the bottlenecks are at different levels of the stack. I'm talking about working quite high up before we issue the I/O to the drive. The NCQ versus DMA is happening at the command protocol level, down between the ATA adapter and the drive.
Can I? Just wondering if, I mean, you're looking at merging multiple disk guards. Just wondering if you can say, you know, if the I/O scheduler has no writes anymore in it, then it's safe to send on a trim, because
Absolutely.
At that point, you know, the drive is presumably not going to organize discards before writes.
Yeah.
Or if it does, then it's optimizing anyway, so that's okay. But you're not having to scan through the I/O scheduler and reorder things yourself.
Yeah.
We've got about time for one more question.
The whole reordering of discards is just kind of odd. Would adding a richer VFS API to Linux help, in that instead of RM actually being a loop that issues a million or 100,000 deletes and then unlinks and everything, would having RMRF be able to go unlink recursive, that which in the kernel could coalesce into a giant Hydra of a trim?
I see a potential problem with that, in that you would have the kernel having to error out halfway through if you got to a file you couldn't delete. And that does tend to be the problem with combining simpler operations into a large operation, is that you have a partial completion question to resolve. And you can't hit Control-C when you do RM minus RF star, absolutely.
And thank you very much to Matt. Well done.
Yes.
Thank you.